I'm Dr. Jeff Meldrum, and you're listening to Squatch Talks podcast. Thank you for squatching.
All right.
That's wonderful.
Testing 1, 2, 3.
You're listening to Squatch Talks podcast. Real stories and real encounters told by real researchers. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
Hey, welcome back to Squatch Talks podcast.
How's everybody doing tonight?
Better and better, I think. Well, here we are with two special guests. We got Tim and Eric Vogel joining us from Massachusetts, or should I say Squatchachusetts? How about you take a moment and introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. I'm Tim. I'm Eric. And that's it. We're the Vogel brothers.
And you've been doing this kind of research for quite some time, though, right?
Yes, we have. We've been doing it since 2013 on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. But it all started back in 1976.
Cool. So. Well, that's awesome. So that's a long time, you know? And
yeah, it has.
And you've had quite a lot of interesting events occur over those time periods. So
sure.
We're excited to have you. This is really the whole premise of our show. We like to have real researchers telling real stories and encounters. So I just wanted to start off though tonight. Of course, I always like to get business out of the way right off the bat because of short attention spans from people these days, right, Heather? So of course we have Heather joining us, my lovely co-host. But we want to thank the guys at the Yeti Lair, Tyrell and Eli, for helping us out and making the Squatch Talks podcast bar with the fine cedar shavings in there, the exfoliates. And of course, our friends at the Black Rifle Coffee Company. I'm drinking a triple shot vanilla caramel espresso, so we're not going to need this light ring pretty soon, that's for sure. But hey, I just wanted to get that out of the way. And of course, our main sponsor, Healthy Too. Shameful self-promotion, but hey, we're allowed to sponsor ourselves, right?
Yeah.
So, but anyway, we're happy to have some special guests joining us, and they got some stories to tell. But I just wanted to start off. I went to my mailbox today, and guess what was in there? The new edition of the Bigfoot Times from Daniel Perez. And it's pretty cool. It has some things about Florida tracks. I haven't read it yet. I literally just opened it. But I opened it up, and it has, book notes. He mentioned certain books, okay? Which I find interesting. Heather loves books, don't you?
Yeah, that's my passion.
That's our number one thing next to Bigfooting with me, of course.
Yeah.
But I just put together 3 bookshelves for her today. Okay. So now she's got plenty of room for her books. All right.
Thank you.
But my books are welcome there, apparently.
No.
I got my own books. But she picked me up a book at Barnes and Noble, and it's called The Secret History of Bigfoot by John O'Connor. Right. And I'm looking through it at the store, and I was like, wait a minute, entering Squatchachusetts. I know Squatchachusetts, right? So I figured I'd pick it up. And I always say I have a pretty good command of the English language, right? Math's not my thing, but English I'm usually pretty good at. Every freaking line in this book, I got to look up a word. Okay. And I mean, for the average Bigfooter, let's face it, we're not rocket scientists, most of us, okay? How the hell does he expect anybody to understand what he's writing?
I'm going to plead the fifth on that one.
I'm warning you. You need a dictionary. Plus, he gets a little bit, he talks to Robert Pyle, the guy who wrote Where Bigfoot Walks, the Dark Divide, right? Yeah. Which was an excellent book, but not real Bigfooty, you know what I mean? Then he talks to another, and he mentions all these different authors. Like in all these references, he's always putting together references of these different authors. So it's like, most of us aren't going to know most of these people, okay? That's one thing. Then he gets into the chapter, and it's like 36 pages of Squatchachusetts. So I you guys get a big nod in that region. And I know you're not mentioned by name, but people I know are mentioned in the chapter, okay? Like Scott, who I've been on expeditions with, and Frank Jr. and Francis.
Sure.
And I remember Frank telling me about the encounter or the visual that he had on this particular night that's talked about. I remember him telling me that. I think it was at the Pennsylvania expedition that I did with Nathan. So, you know, just really cool to see that kind of stuff. And it's from 2020.
Really interesting, yeah.
It's a new book, you know.
Standing upright. Right at us.
And he was coming straight for us. That's one of our inside jokes from Beast. But, you know how it is. You guys have been out on a lot of expeditions, done a lot of BFO stuff, and I'm sure a lot of your own things as well, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Many. Yep.
I wanted you to first of all, mention, I know you guys, by the time this airs, it will have happened, but you're doing an event. What is it, Friday or Saturday?
Friday night. It's Let's Talk Bigfoot. We're at the Beckett Country Store.
Okay.
And it's in Beckett, Massachusetts, little country store. And it's just going to be a whole bunch of fun. You know, it's it's a little country store on Route 8, and there's a bunch of tables and a little sit down food section. And we're going to be back there with some casts, and we're going to be talking Bigfoot.
There's a lot of activity within 5 miles of that country store.
Nice.
A lot of activity.
Yep.
Wow.
You know, in past years and not too far, about maybe I'd say the last time was maybe 2-3 years ago.
Yeah. No kidding. Wow. Are you going to do like a town hall thing where you have people, tell stories and all? Or?
Oh, yes. Oh, if they have a story, that's exactly what we're looking for.
Yes.
So that's going to help our research.
Yes, but it's not going to be... Let's put it this way. It's a country store atmosphere. So the locals that know about it are going to come in and sit down. And we're hoping that enough of the word has gotten out locally that the locals that are interested in coming out will sit down and have, they'll listen to us and then share their stories. That's the whole purpose of this thing.
That's the whole
point. Not for us to go out and share our story. We're trying to pick up the locals because I've got people that have called me directly and said, hey, XYZ is happening.
No sooner put out business cards in this store, and we had 2 phone calls.
Wow.
Yeah.
Two phone calls. So.
It's a matter of they need to know how to get a hold of people. Not everybody knows about the BFRO. Not everybody knows about Bigfoot. Not everybody knows what they saw. They just know that it's something that might be Bigfoot, and how do I tell somebody? And are they actually going to listen?
We're the outlet.
And hence,
or we want to be the outlet.
I'm the only health food store in America with a Bigfoot museum.
There you go.
I don't keep it a secret. They're like, wait a minute, what's with the Bigfoot? And you wouldn't believe how many people have told me stories.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, we turned around and we gave the guy, we have a big silhouette of a Bigfoot.
Yeah, big cutout.
Big cutout. Big 8-foot plywood piece. He's got it up on the building. He's already had people in there asking.
Yeah.
So it should be a lot of fun.
It'll turn into more of a town hall
with
his local marketing and stuff like that.
That'll be a lot of fun. That'll be
If we get 15, 20 people in there, that's awesome.
That and coffee, we're all set.
And coffee, In fact, I'm going to bring in the Sasquatch Coffee Company into my shop. I'm talking to them about having it available here for sale. I tried the Ape Canyon blend. It was really good.
Yeah.
But we have a few metal Bigfoot cutouts out where you come into my shop. So I commissioned a guy to make me a big 8-foot cutout, but it was right before COVID, and then the wood prices went up, and he never did it.
Yeah. So
I got a stencil. I'm going to make it myself. I'll just do it.
That's what I've been doing.
That's how we did it.
Right?
I got a half a dozen of them through camp, just people to talk about.
It's a great talk piece.
Yeah. In fact, where we had our expedition in Pennsylvania, there was a guy down the road on Coon Road, and they had a with the flag and the
suit,
With So we wanted to interview him, but then I think maybe Nathan or one of the other guys went down and nah, man, you don't want to talk to this guy.
Kind
of thing.
He's the one that's got all the stories, though.
Yeah, absolutely. No, his house borders the apple orchards. I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah.
The apple orchards down there were insane when we went.
Absolutely.
We have orchards around here. but nothing like we saw down in Pennsylvania. Yeah. Oh, that was crazy.
We had a 3/4 acre apple orchard
in my backyard,
and that was like a postage stamp down there.
Oh, yeah. That's the capital down there. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
And in northern here, it's over 20.
I couldn't believe it. I didn't know they had that much fruit down there.
Brought a bag of apples with me from New Jersey, right? Organic apples. Yeah. I'm like, they're not going to want my apples. What the hell am I bringing apples?
Bringing pears next time.
But they liked it.
Right. So something different.
They did like the apple cider donuts I brought them from Johnson's Farm, though. Those were all gone. There wasn't a morsel left, okay? But the trail camera that would have gotten them eating these apple cider donuts, not a single shot.
Really?
Clean it up, okay? And this is a good camera, single shot. Curse of squat, you know, the squat's curse again. So.
Yeah, I hear you. Hey, when we put out cameras, sometimes I've got two or three that we pull it out and they're facing each other at different heights, you know,
top down.
And it's still, you get nothing. You get every other animal going through it, but it's crazy.
Yeah.
Maybe someday.
You know, you guys, I'm sure you know, we think that they might have the ability to see the IR or they can sense that there's something different in their neck of the woods. I'm not so sure on that they're going to pick up on a camera necessarily at night if they're walking back from, you know, foraging or whatever. Right. I mean, honestly, that's kind of tough. But who knows, right? We don't know for sure.
Well, we've been talking about it, and we've been trying to use it.
Exactly.
The exact topic that you're talking about. Yeah. You ever hear of the material Hex, the company Hex?
It's a hunting clothing.
H-E-C-S.
I don't think so.
Well, they make hunting clothing. And turkey hunters love it because when you put this on, it holds back the electrodes from your body.
Oh, no kidding.
It's like wearing a Faraday cage.
Right.
Wow.
It's like it's a carbon fiber woven suit. You put it on and it reduces your electrical output. So if you run an ohms meter over, you know, your palm, you're putting out, you know, plus one or two, whatever you're reading. Huh. But there's electrical output from just blinking, muscle movement. It's all electrical output.
Yeah.
And they see this input or this output in various different ways. And in one particular way, the turkeys are very sensitive to this movement. It's almost insane how sensitive and cautious they are.
Yeah.
And that's because they can see this in a different infrared spectrum of some sort. Hmm. And by wearing this Hex suit, it reduces your output so it's not noticed. And when they put this stuff on, they do the videos. They've got birds, bobcats,
all kinds of critters walk right
up to them, sniffing the camera, sniffing the firearm, you know, and then walking away.
Crazy, huh?
So if it's working like that, reducing that output, we thought we would take some of ours and wrap it around a camera
and give it a shot.
See if it'll work.
See if it works.
So we're reducing that output.
Yeah.
So we put an email into Mike's, I think it's Slogart there from Hex, the owner. And, you know, he's probably thinking I'm nuts because it's Bigfoot. But, I'm thinking along those lines, you know, all us Bigfooters say, oh, geez, you're not going to get a picture. They can see the Bigfoot camera, you know, the whole thing. Yeah. I'm like, well, hey, you know what? This might work. Let's try it.
And if you you give them credit to it, that could be a huge boon to their business.
I'm Paul Patterson Jr., and you're watching Squatch Talk Podcast. Thank you so much for squatching.
Sure. Awesome. Oh, absolutely.
Not to mention they're going to hide their own cameras.
There's millions of cameras on there.
They may do it. They may do it for their own.
Yeah. I'd be interested to hear your results for sure. You know? Because I don't rely.
That's part of our research.
Right. That's part of the research. Along with our track traps and that we have.
Yeah.
And ours just aren't little track traps. They're an acre, 2 acres
construction worthy.
Wow. Yeah.
Bulldozer worthy.
It's empty lots. It's empty lots that we have forested to make for ATV training. different trainings and stuff like that. You know, by now they're, you know, it's mud, so when you get anything to walk through it, it's right there.
That's awesome. Yeah, well, you know, I was just out day scouting last week, as a matter of fact, last Monday. I finally had a break in this rain. I went out solo to a spot that my team wants to get out to, a little northeast of a spot we've been researching, right? And it was pretty muddy to enter the trail. And I decided, you know what, I want to take the truck in. I'll just hike in. So I parked the truck, hiked a couple of miles. On my way out, I heard some movement, and I look, it's a turkey. I turn on my GoPro. I go up the little, you know, mound to get a, you know, off the trail to go see it. It's gone already. That quick.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're fast. Yeah. No, and that's, you know,
they don't fly. Their
sensitivity is their awareness with their eyesight.
Big time.
Keen. Mm-hmm. Very, very, very sharp. It's hard to outwit those things. Yeah. And they're tough. And they're finding that by using this, they're actually, you know, not recognizing you. Or when you do have movement, it doesn't have that output.
They get a lot closer, and you end up getting a lot more.
Yeah.
So it does work for human body. So we don't know how it will work against a camera, but we're gonna try it and see what happens.
Some people will take take their camera and they'll put tree bark in front of it and stuff like that. And
I do.
That's gonna camouflage it visually, but not electrically. The electronic discharge is gonna go right through it. It'll go through it, around it.
Yeah. Yep. And with frequency, like Brian, my friend from New York, Brian Spooner. And Nathan and I, we've done some research where we actually employ using frequency and we've had some results in a sense of some responses, you know, vocalizations and things like that. Yep. Also some paranormal activity too as a result.
it's weird how that too, they may come together at some point.
Brian's tent got teabagged, remember? On an SLS camera. It was pretty scary.
There's something on there, tent.
But no, I'm interested to hear results you get. And it seems like you're in a great area. You're in Western Massachusetts, right?
Yes, we are.
That's an awesome spot bordering on New York near Albany, right?
It's not that far away. Yeah, kind of in the foothills of the Berkshires.
Beautiful. Yeah, well. Couldn't ask for a better research area.
Well, it's a beautiful spot. The area that we're sitting in right now is 1,300 acres.
Yeah, that's our property. That's what we manage.
You know, and then a bunch of state forests and a whole bunch of other stuff. So it's just a big greenway. Western Mass is dotted little towns, and it's mostly a greenway. Yep. And that's where we are. If you go south from my house, you won't hit any. The first thing you'll hit is a fire road at the Cobble Mountain Reservoir, and that's about a mile from here, going south.
Yeah.
After there, you're going south. It's miles before you get to the next road and have to go across the lake. Yeah. Well, you're talking miles, so you don't want to get lost and go south. So there's tons of woods, and it's just a random farm. You know, it's random farm. It might be a 500-acre farm. It might be a 200-acre farm. But it's hay, it's corn, it's squash, it's this, it's that, it's all kinds of different stuff.
It is the perfect greenway for a Bigfoot to be in.
Yeah.
There's plenty of room for it to hide, plenty of space for it to eat, drink, the whole nine yards.
Absolutely. Yeah, the watersheds are
full.
The watersheds are full.
As of yet undiscovered primate would need to sustain itself. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I would imagine, yeah.
So
right now, yeah, plenty.
I was going to say, we've gotten a little bit about each other now and kind of got a nice momentum going. Why don't you tell me, like you said, this goes back as far as 1996. I'm assuming that means something occurred around that time.
1976.
Yeah, we were kids. See, she's got a good memory.
I didn't take
that. So it was in 1976, and that was it. It was, November, we went and saw a movie. It was called Sasquatch, the legend of Bigfoot or Sasquatch, whatever it was. It was in 76. And we got to go and see that, and we hiked all the way over there, which is, I don't know, that probably was
7 or 8 miles, maybe one way. This was in the winter. Yeah, in the winter, snowing and everything, to go see this movie. Yeah. That's how interesting it was. And we had no idea what a Bigfoot was. You know,
yeah, we didn't have just that.
Came on, saw it in the newspaper or something like that, and that was it. You know, so we get over there, we see the movie. It was cool, and we hike back through the storm, and we come back, and that's it. Nothing happens. And then in December, I think it was December 30th, it was just before January, all of a sudden, there's these tracks, these large foot tracks that are coming literally through our backyard, right through our backyard, coming from the river, the railroad tracks, and they're going back down through our yard, through our creek, down back to the river. It crosses a canal on the ice into, you know, over the Westfield River, over the Westfield Dam there. And then it crosses the ice and into the west, or into Robinson State Park. And that's where they end up losing this thing. Yeah.
Back then, the river used to freeze so you could walk across it.
Yeah. We were kids. We weren't allowed to get,
we weren't allowed to go across it.
But so we didn't, you know, it was kind of,
but they turned, whatever it was, came up through, and it went. I mean, it was walking in snow that was about 18 inches deep to begin with.
Yeah.
Yeah. These I think the tracks were 27 inches.
Yeah. And the tracks were like 27 inches long. You know, but, you know, we didn't have it. We didn't know anything about a Bigfoot back then. That was the West Coast thing. You know, that wasn't here.
How long after you saw the movie did you have these tracks? Did you?
That was a month. It was, we saw it in November, October, November. And this thing happened literally in December going into January. It was a New Year's kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So this thing happened, and all of a sudden, you know, the next day we've got newspaper, the channel, you know, the news is there, cops are there. There's all these people there.
Investigators.
Well, they weren't there yet. It took a couple of days for all this to happen. So you know, for over a week, we've got people in our yard investigating these tracks and whatnot, and eventually, we have these investigators come down. So it's folks like us that come down, and his name was Lee Frank. I know that now because I've been able to go back and read the report. You know, it's online and it's in there. So he came down and they did their research. They were in our backyard, and we literally, they followed us following the Bigfoot tracks until we got to the dam. And then they crossed the river, and we didn't. So we went back. But this thing actually probably went a few miles. So it was a legit walk in the snow.
Okay.
And he crossed, you know, the Westfield River, a couple of dams, a couple of hills.
He really did his due diligence, I'll tell you.
And we had no idea. So all we know is, you know, we got these tracks in our backyard, and it's like the coolest thing that's happening. And you're 13, 14 years old. So it's like, whoa. And there's this creature that's no one ever heard before. You know, it's like Bigfoot, right? What is this? But that it's in your backyard and all the pictures. So it was a real big and fun to do at that time. It turned out.
I was going to say, that just really resonates with me, though. I got to tell you, because that was the movie that started it for me.
There you go.
That's Squatch the Legend of Bigfoot. And it was a month that it took a month before I could actually sleep, because I was so freaked out, thinking it was going to reach its arm through my window and grab me. Okay.
Right. Well, within a month, this thing was in my backyard, walking through my backyard. So, and that was our reality. That was the reality. All these people, the news, the cameras. So it was legit as far as we were concerned. Turned out it was a hoax. It turned out to be a hoax. And this kid turned himself in. He says, hey, you know, I was messing with the local kids. You know, it was a prank that went too far. And I didn't know how to stop it after, you know, it was on the news and the cops were looking. And he was just praying he didn't get caught. And they ended up giving him the plywood tracks.
It was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Because he was trying to do it for the kids in the neighborhood.
Right.
But it got out of hand because, you know, somebody else was really looking at the same movie we were, and all of a sudden, oh, man, it's a big one. And the poor kid didn't know what to do.
Oh, man.
So it was real big to do.
I mean, normally people start out with an actual Bigfoot thing going on. We started out with a hoax.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That never left us. And now we're out there all the time.
Mm-hmm. You know, so it was totally reversed.
Yeah, I mean, at 14, I don't even know what a hoax was.
Really, we didn't know.
Who cares? Bigfoot was in my backyard, dude. That's all that mattered.
Yeah.
That was, but you know, it did turn out to be a hoax. The guy came in and you know, he squirted it away later.
A young kid,
but it was a good, you know. So you took that memory and you parked it in the backyard or in the back space, and then you know, 2013 rolls around. And we go to New York, and you know, we had been guiding, and that was our next experience, was in 2013. You know, at this point, we've got a business called Tacoma Mountain Outdoors. We've been guiding for 10 or 15 years at this point, and guiding, you know, we were wilderness guides. It was an adventure education company. Wilderness guides guided all over New England. I did, 30-day trips down into Ecuador. Rafting, mountaineering, climbing, nice. Mountaineering guys,
spelunking,
all that stuff. Yards. So yep. I, you know, we did an adventurous that was our business. Mm-hmm. And
in this area that he's talking about, we've been guiding in there for 10 years.
10 years. Yeah, it was the St. Regis Wilderness Canoe Area. If you're interested in heading out there, or your viewers are interested, mm-hmm. It's a canoeing only area. There's only, yep. You know, it's non-powered, so it's non-motorized, and it's paddle and portage. And we went out to this one spot, and we had been, you know, paddling all summer with Boy Scout troops and clients all summer. And it was time to go on vacation, and we ended up going back to the Adirondacks
to paddle
to go and paddle. And we wanted to go into this one particular area because it was a small lake, and it had one campsite. And in New York, you have designated campsites where you can set up a camp.
Right.
And
they're marked. There is no satellite camping.
It's rough. It's rough.
Yeah. Because the rangers will throw you out of there.
Yeah. There's ways to do it in New York. I did it with Brian and Heather and I last day. We had a satellite camp that there's certain specific requirements, but it depends on which county you're in. So
yeah,
the county.
That's a whole nother thing.
Yeah.
Thing that.
Yeah. And
of course, our friend Patty, dear friends Patty and her husband Eric, she's a park, you know, police officer. And so
we'll just throw her name out there.
No, there is ways to do it.
Oh, good.
You know, appreciate it.
There is. They got a tough job. There's a way to do it, and it's called the Leave No Trace Principles, and you go 200 yards or so many feet away from it and off trails and whatnot. You can certainly do it.
I'm sorry. Yeah, it's a spot, though, you're saying, and, you know, New York's tough about that, so.
Yeah, they are. So these are designated spots, and in New York, in this area, it's a boreal forest. It's a really thick, dense, wooded area. It's not a place that you just randomly go bushwhacking through if you're not on a trail, because it's very dense. It's very thick. It's a heavy spruce. I call it like the pit bull pine. It's like, you know, above tree line where you get in that really small, thick pine,
right.
That stage before you get into, you know, you go into no more trees.
Yeah.
And it goes into the alpine zone.
10 feet in,
you know, so it's a really thick forest. Yeah. And so that's where we're at. So I don't believe we're being pranked, being the one campsite or anything like that. There's no trails out there.
We did it when school was back in.
True.
Mm-hmm. Summer was over. So we specifically did that so we would be alone. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't want to run into anybody.
And yeah, so we went midweek. At least
we thought that's what we were doing.
Midweek. And it would, you know, so there wasn't anybody up there. There was no one at the trailhead, and anybody out there at the trailhead with the car to put in. So anyways, so we get out there, we're paddling, and we get to our spot. We go to set up our camp, and we set it up, and we're going to have dinner now. We put all of our stuff away. We're all squared away, and we're going down, and we're fishing. We're fishing for dinner. And we're going along. And it's like a fishing story at this time, right?
It was probably the best fly fishing day I've ever had.
Yeah.
Okay. I was catching them 3, 4, 5 pound bass like they were nothing. He's paddling and I'm fishing. I was having a great time. That's how it started.
You're just fishing and doing your thing. You're not fishing, right?
No, we weren't even in the spots at this point. We didn't even know. I mean, we did, you know, we had the experience in
right.
As a kid. We didn't go out and do squash.
We weren't out squashing at this point.
Right. You're just out doing your thing.
Yeah, that's it. We were having a good time, and that was it. And so we're fishing, and we're catching fish, and we come to this, I guess it was an island, and then a stream that goes up, so a little confluence where it comes into the lake from a stream. And we're going up along the stream now. And at this point, we literally have forgotten about dinner because we're catching 3 to 5 pound smallies, and they're just breaking water and, you know, bouncing all over the place, you know. So it's a fishing trip at that point. And we get into this stream, and it's a braided stream. You know, it kind of goes in all different directions with no real direction. It's like just channels everywhere. And it's eventually we got to figure it out. It was all beaver trails. And it ended up coming out at a beaver dam. And this beaver dam, you know, sitting in a canoe, is about head level. Sitting in the canoe, I'm looking at the top of the beaver dam. And it goes, and it's a bow-shaped type of, you know, it looks like a bow. You know, it's a bow shape. And it goes back towards the woods. The water's now tapering back and going to the woods. And the stream is probably 4 or 5 feet wide, maybe 6 feet wide, mish, you know, coming in to this beaver pond, or what's created a little pond because of the beaver dam. And it wasn't very big. I mean, it was about the size of a, you know, 20-foot room, maybe. You know, it wasn't a big beaver dam where this was. And it went out bigger, but the dam itself. So
gotcha.
It's up there. We're fishing into it. And the first fish we caught out of there, I'm pulling it back. I'm bringing it back. And all of a sudden, these two trees start shaking almost simultaneously, like they were in a snow globe. Just, and then moments later, this roaring starts. And the roaring and screaming and, right? I don't know how else to explain it. But
to this
roaring
day, I can't. You can't explain the sound.
You can't make it out. It was a very loud roar.
Lion roaring.
Yes, it was. It's not like I heard the Sierra sounds or any of that. Nothing like that. This was get the hell out of here kind of roar.
You know, and
that's
and,
what it was.
And we weren't into Bigfooting at the time.
No, so, no. You know,
this was just out of nowhere.
It was so loud. So now we've got these two trees shaking. Now this hasn't stopped. This whole thing went on for 15 minutes, maybe.
Oh, wow.
We no phone. We were fishing for dinner. We didn't even own a cell phone. We might have had like a camera or something, but it wasn't on the fishing trip. So anyways, these trees are shaking. Now there's a screaming going on.
Yeah.
And
yelling, screaming.
And that's the only trees that are moving in the whole forest. Just crazy. Like stuff is falling off, hitting the, you know, in the water and whatnot. And you could actually feel the vibrations from the roaring and yelling, screaming. You could feel it like I tell people, it's like you're at a Ted Nugent concert. You know, it's just right in your chest. Boom, and you could feel it, the reverb. And so this kept going and it got more aggressive the longer it went, right?
Yeah. The longer we stayed there, the louder it got.
Yeah, it got more aggressive to where we backed the heck out. And that was the funny part because he wanted to leave and I wanted to go and check it out. Even though there's a beaver dam, I wasn't going to go much further than the beaver dam. But you know, it was a cartoon. Remember, the thing would have ripped in half.
You're in a canoe 16 feet apart. I'm in the front. He's in the back. And I said, well, if you want to go in, we're going to spin this baby around.
No. I was like, what? No way. It was a very, very surreal experience because we didn't know what was making the noise.
And it never stopped.
And we didn't try to even analyze it because they didn't know how to analyze it. There was no draws. There was no banks, pulls, the reserves, nothing. I'd never heard this before. It pushed us.
Nothing thrown at you, right? I mean, there wasn't any rocks thrown or any branches broken and thrown at you?
Yes, there was. I don't think it was it. I don't think it was directly intended to hit us or come in. Actually, nothing really came past.
Yeah, just to get us the hell out of the way.
That's how
it was. It pushed us. We were like 60, 70 yards out, and that yell was still bouncing off of your chest.
Yeah, we paddled way out.
So we went all the way across.
So we're sitting there, we're listening to this, we're watching it, and he's still fishing too.
This is going on.
And we're backing out, we're listening, and finally, I guess it just stopped.
Yep. As fast as it started, it just stopped.
Yep. And it just stopped, and we're sitting in the middle of the lake.
Wow.
And it's eerily quiet now. There's nothing happening. It's just the splashing up against the side of the canoe, you know. Mm-hmm. And that was it. That was it, literally.
That's when you say to yourself, man, I wish there was somebody else out here camping.
anything.
But we were the only ones there.
Holy crap. Did you wind up camping that night? You stayed at the campsite?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
We started to paddle back towards the campsite. And we got almost halfway there, and I just said, hey, you know what? And he goes, yeah. We're on the same side camping as all of this thing just took place about 100 yards, 150 yards away.
Yeah, maybe 200.
Just down the shoreline from where this just happened.
That was a long night.
Odd.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, my God. I don't know if I have the balls to stay after that.
Well, there was no running around. You know, you were not... You weren't getting in a car. We were paddling and portaging. Right. So it was, canoeing and then carrying our stuff through the woods to get to the next day, to the next lake, to the next lake.
Yeah.
There was no going home. Nope. There was nothing.
Yet you
dealt with it.
Simple as that.
You kept one eye open, We tried to figure out what it was on the way back in the canoe. And we almost kind of came up with a mountain lion fighting a couple of bears or a couple of mountain lions fighting a bear, because we just didn't know how to, there was no vocalization.
We just couldn't figure out how the two trees were shaking.
Or the noise, the volume, the trees.
But, we went back.
We did. We went back the following year.
Wow.
And we measured
two trees that were shaking.
We went back and we measured those trees. They were about 8 inches in diameter and about 7 to 8 feet apart.
Yep. More near eight, but yeah.
And they were shaking like you said, a snow.
So these trees are this big around. Yeah. I mean, you go out with 10 of your best friends and shake that tree, and it ain't going to shake like this was. And there was branches and stuff and sticks coming out of that tree. That's why when you ask that question, I can't say it was throwing things.
Sure.
Because there was things coming out
from the tree.
For sure.
But it could have been, he could have threw the tree at us.
The yell was what really got you, because it was so loud for such a distance out in the lake.
Yeah. And for 10 or 15 minutes this went on.
Yeah, it just never stopped.
It never stopped.
For that long, for it to do that intimidation, that's really, I mean, it was letting you know,
well,
welcome here.
Yeah.
Well, we came up with an idea on why that all happened.
Yeah. Right.
But before that, as a ranger, I don't get a lot of, I've had tons of bear encounters and I don't even count them anymore. And that's not bragging. It's just a fact and you have them. I just had a 300 pound bear. You can ask my wife, a 300 pound plus on my back porch last night.
Oh my God.
Last night. When I walk out of here, it's Bigfoot country. Oh. It's 1,300 acres in the middle of nothing.
You're a half mile from the main road.
Right.
Yeah.
So what is your philosophy? Tell me, what was the, you said you were going to say that.
We came up with the reason why we think it happened.
Yeah, the noises that we heard, a bear would just generally run off.
And run.
Yeah, they puff and then run. Yeah. They don't yell, scream, and nothing at this volume that we were hearing.
Right.
That would reverberate off of you. So that was just, it wasn't, so we kind of figured out it wasn't a bear. Or a mountain lion, that kind of stuff.
Once we talked to some people and heard basically almost kind of the same story or the same situations or whatever the noises, we kind of figured that since it was a great fishing day, they could have been on the other side of that dam. And if you've ever seen the hands of the cast of a Bigfoot, they're enormous. They're like a first baseman glove,
There's some huge. Big mitts.
So they could have been fishing in that pond when we backed in and he cast over and he caught that fish. That's when all hell broke loose. As soon as he caught that fish. Yeah. And they must have been like, hey, wait a minute.
You're taking my grub.
Right. You know, and you, and if you have one or two of them in there with those big old mitts and they're using that to scoop them into a corner and toss them out, that's dinner.
And like,
and here we are pulling out the fish.
Yeah. Like, so you got to remember
day. So you were reeling them in and they're thinking, hey, this is coming out of my table here, but not knowing what was going on at the time, as you might now, right? You could have offered them a couple of fish. Had you, you know what I mean? Had you known, you could have been like,
yes,
Bigfoot. Right?
And you know, I would have done that. No,
well, I'll tell you what, it didn't sound like it wanted to talk with me at all. It was... told me clearly, undefinitively, get the hell out. That's what it said.
Yeah.
And it didn't need to speak my language. I knew completely what I needed to do.
That was,
it was that clear. It was that clear.
So that really got us into Bigfooting.
Yeah. So like you said, Monday morning quarterbacking, we were there fishing, the opportunity for them to be there fishing,
for the same reason that we were there.
Yeah.
They figured nobody was going to be there.
Right.
Plus, this beaver dam created a trap. It's a natural fish trap.
Yeah.
So, you know, like you said, was you got these two Bigfoot. We say two Bigfoot because the trees were
enormous,
almost 8 feet apart.
Anything between them, right?
No, there was nothing in between. It was a big stretch between the two trees.
Right.
Yeah. So we assume it's two Bigfoot. It could have been one massive thing, but if I don't know. I could tell you the two trees were shaken.
I mean, hey, I'm open to all different ideas, but I don't think it was translucent between the two trees. You know what I mean?
No. We didn't see it. No.
See it. So obviously there was, you know.
Yeah, when we went back the following year, I mean, we had a bushwhack through just to get to those two trees.
Right.
Yeah. Because there's another pond way in the back, but.
It, or,
I mean,
nobody hoaxing you. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. I tell you that's what we think happened. We interrupted them fishing.
Yeah, and they just finally got done with it. They tolerated us right up through the braided stream. They were enjoying us. Hey, look at these nitwits out here. Hey, just stay out here. We're good.
Yeah, as long as we were out here catching fish, it didn't bother them. Yeah. Boy, the minute that we went into that dam,
they didn't like it.
That was it.
So after you had this experience, is that when you dove into like looking up reports online and checking things out? Is that what really spurred it?
Got into Facebook, actually. I didn't have anything to do with any of that stuff. I really didn't know about Facebook. Finally got into Facebook. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm reading stories that were, you know, not exactly like ours, but some of the things that had happened over the years was very similar.
Yep.
And so we started putting two and two together, and we came up with, holy crap, this was probably a Bigfoot experience. You know, we didn't see it, but I can tell you what didn't do that, you know. And it's, I can't even, the list would be extensive on what didn't do it.
Yeah.
What probably, you know, did it? A Bigfoot.
We have spent.
Or a couple.
We have spent.
Yeah,
so years, 30, 40 years in the woods.
Just with our business.
Just with the business. You know, my wife used to say, you know, you're always in the woods. You're gone almost 160 days a year. And so we
programmed.
And we've been doing this for 10 years at this point.
Yeah.
In this same place, you know, so it's, I mean, we knew what was going on. And then all of a sudden that happened.
What, 10, 11 years now?
11
years. We just celebrated 11 years as being, you know,
together,
2 years married, of course, but almost three, right? But yeah, she's been doing it with me since 2013. You know, she usually said, hey, can I come over and watch Finding Bigfoot with you? And I was like, yeah, I don't know. I know your parents, you know. She knows she'd be on Finding Bigfoot with me, right?
There you go.
Right, right.
Well, that's an awesome way to get into it, let me tell you. You know, I just did the search for Bigfoot, and I was shocked when I found the BFRO's database with sightings here in New Jersey. You know, like, I was like, shocked. Yeah. So that's what kind of got me into it, and then I went on my first expedition in 2008, you know. But Scott Ward, actually, in the book that I was mentioning, it mentions his experience that he had canoeing on a lake and having rocks thrown in at him, right? And so he got out of his canoe to go check it out, and had this real, like almost like a zapping type of thing where he felt nauseous and a few dread, and he's like, I'm out of here. Yeah. Got his canoe and took off, you know?
No, the vocalizations that we were getting were clearly get in your canoe and get gone because they certainly weren't having it. They certainly weren't having
it. I'm just glad that they stayed on that side of the dam and not our side.
Yeah, I wish it showed, got to see something, but we didn't. And that's...
I'm curious.
Now I would like to see it. Yeah. Back then, I didn't want to even know what it was. I just wanted to get out of there.
Yeah. But you met it. You stayed. Obviously, you weren't going anywhere.
We did. I'm
curious. Did you clean up some fish and have a fish fry that night? And
No. Made a big campfire. Hung out at the campfire. And that was it. Didn't even really discuss what happened. Just kind of knew every noise in the woods was whatever it was coming for us. And that was scary enough. And
if you've ever been in the Adirondacks at 4 o'clock at night in the woods, you got your headlamp on.
It's dark.
It's already dark. So at 9 o'clock, it's pitch black. You can't even see your hand in front of your face.
I've been to the Berkshires. I've been in the forest at night with just a red LED on,
pitch black, and you can't see your hand.
Yeah. So, because Frank and Fran were on our Southern New York State expedition, and I was with Frank in my first water night op in a little boat with a little trolling motor, and we had a 2.5 minute thermal encounter with a squirrel on the bank. And it was doing this thing where it wasn't sure which way to go. And then we watched it go in 45 degrees right up the hill silently. Okay. And then Frank's like, I lost it. And then
I think Frank was with us.
30 seconds later, you hear this branch snap and Patty turns to look at me and we both went, did you hear that? Like, but yeah,
that's wild.
That's cool stuff. And that was in the Berkshires, but in the southern region, you know?
Yep,
that's wild.
Yeah, we had a very similar experience to that.
Pretty much.
We called it the pacing Bigfoot because it was it didn't know which way to go, sort of. Mm-hmm. We caught it, off guard. It was over.
But there were 12
stimulated
of us.
Or something.
We were on an expedition. There were 12 of us.
Was that 2018?
18, I think it was.
Okay. Yeah, and it was in the Berkshires.
Yeah, it's October Mountain State Forest.
October Mountain.
That's our other... one of our primary research areas.
You mentioned that to me. I was going to get to that. Yeah. I would love to hear that one if you don't mind sharing.
Sure. Go ahead. We were having an expedition. There was about 12 of us. It was a misty rain. And we went up to October Mountain. We parked. We get out. We're all going down the dirt road. We get to this dam. And that there's a picnic table, and there's plenty of room. So there's about six of them standing along the lake, or along the shoreline, and they've got two or three fleers that they're using.
Yep.
And while they're using it, we were there for about, I don't know, 8 to 10 minutes, and then somebody had said, "Hey, I see something here." So now everybody, the three guys that have these flares, they're all looking at this image. This image is going back and forth. And we see it go 20, 30 yards up, turn around and come back. Feet. And they're looking at this thing and they're saying, "Do you see this?" And all of a sudden somebody says, "Hey, did you turn around? Did anybody take a picture of this thing?" You know,
all the flares got camera record, this, that, and the other thing.
But they were so into just watching it, no one thought to push the record button. But they did.
A couple of seconds of yuck.
At the same time, one of our buddies, Chuck, turns around and says, "Hey, guys, do you smell something?"
Yeah.
And you had this
wafting smell.
Wafting smell of musk. First time I've ever had... I've ever smelt anything while I was out there. And this was definite. You could smell it. There were about four or five people that were beyond me that were sitting on the picnic table. They got a whiff of it too. And they said, "Wow, what is that?" well, what's that smell? But at this time, while they finally get about 6 to 10 seconds of a video, this thing was walking back and forth. It would walk up a little further and then would come back. Then it would walk up a little further and come back. And on the last time that it walked to the left, it stepped down and it was gone. Wow. A couple of minutes later, or a couple of seconds later, yeah, in the woods, there's a pine tree, and this ball of light shows up at the top of this pine tree.
Halfway up.
It's like a light blue ball. But it's the light is inside, not outside.
Wow.
It's not.
Radiating.
You can see this blue ball.
You can see it in.
But it's not radiating.
Exactly.
It's not emitting light.
And it was just sitting there halfway up in this tree. And then it went up a little higher. I don't know, about 100 feet in the air maybe. And it started to go to the right. And that's
the treetops.
Going to the right, it just go. And we're all watching this thing. And it's going to the right. And next thing you know, it just goes, gone.
Wow.
Gone. So we not only have this image on the FLIR, but we all just sat there and watched this light come out of nowhere. Right after this stepped off of whatever it was walking, when it just stepped and gone. And then it was there. We went back the next day. We turned around and we went back and we saw about six tracks.
Yeah, there were six tracks.
But five of those tracks you couldn't cast. You wouldn't have got anything. This track here.
Wow.
This track here was on a slight incline.
That's a big one.
You can see the toes.
The
toes kind of go on an angle where it's going up a hill and grabbing.
It's gripping.
It's really hard to see it.
No, it's real
clear. Yeah, it's hard to do it in that little window right there.
No, I can see
it. The toes right there?
I do. And it's the same kind of thing that I have here.
There you go. Yeah, it's, I mean, they're there, you know, they're right there, and they're kind of tweaked this way, so it shows you it was digging in, you know? Legit heel.
Legit heel. And that's where it stepped up. That was the last cat. That was the last footprint, and then that ball of light showed up. And that's the only one out of about five or six that we could get.
That's
the rest were just, they were just too distorted.
Sure. Yeah, so we had you know, a dozen witnesses. We had FLIRs. We had a couple seconds of video. It was raining, so it was all digital. It was 100 yards away, so it came out like crap. So the video is no.
Yeah, the FLIRs only go 100 yards. My rangefinder would only go 100 yards.
Yeah, it's one of the TK scouts, you know, so unfortunately. That's Bigfooting, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
We all saw it, you know. We're all looking through the FLIRs, watching this thing. We're like, wow, this is crazy.
Yeah. The smell.
Yeah, the FLIR we were using on the lake that night was an old fireman's unit, an MSA, which has, we have the screen we can watch, but no recording capability, you know what I mean? Unless you're recording with a camera or your phone, the screen, which we all left on the shore because I didn't want to take a chance on, you know, us drowning and getting our equipment all wet, right? So the good FLIR was on shore.
Right.
But hey, it was an exciting, you know, first
absolutely
FLIR night op. You know what I mean? Right. I've always wanted to do this. And for the first time doing one, having that type of an experience was just like awesome.
That's wild. That's awesome. That's what keeps you going back.
Yeah.
We'll go up to New York and do a live one.
Yeah. Man. Well, I'm game. New York. I'm from New York originally. Yeah. That's where I saw the movie, you know, Sasquatch Legend of Bigfoot. In the movie theater in Smithtown. And I'm saying there's no Bigfoot on the island, but I was scared shitless, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, right.
So that experience.
And the Adirondacks is 600 million acres or 6 million acres?
I know.
I mean, it's crazy.
We got 1 million in my backyard, you know what I mean? But it's all...
It's unbelievable.
That was an expedition you guys were on, right? In 2018.
Yes.
Okay. 2018.
So anyways, we had we had the FLIRs for mm-hmm. that kind of a visual. We had a dozen or so people going through the FLIRs, you know, swapping off, looking at this while it was pacing back and forth. So that took some time.
Right.
And then everybody witnessed the ball, the orb.
Right.
And you go to the top of the trees, the zooming off, and the smell.
It was so crazy.
We had all those three things in one pond, you know, in a place, you know, you do these expeditions, as you know, with people that are paying to try to have an experience. And we try our hardest to give them that effect. And we've been very successful in Western Mass.
And you know,
we've had our own experiences. Okay. That's why we go back. We had our own experience. We were paddling up there in that little pond. We were up there fishing. We were canoeing. Mm-hmm. And we had rocks, big rocks, thrown into the water behind the canoe.
This is in October Mountain State Forest. This isn't on the canoe trip.
This is October Mountain, where this happened. That's why we go back.
Yeah.
Because we've had things happen. We took a group out once with they were a race car team.
Yeah.
And they wanted to go Bigfooting. So Squatchachusetts took them out.
Uh-huh.
We were out there, and I stayed on the side of the dam, and they went across. Tim and the rest went on to the other side.
Yeah.
I bet you they didn't get 100 yards around that or around the curve, and there was a howl.
No kidding.
Wow.
And they radioed, did you do that? I said, that wasn't me. Mm. I said, I'm just sitting over here next to the picnic table.
Yeah.
Couldn't have been 2 minutes later, there was a tree getting pushed over about 50, 60 yards from me.
Wow.
They all come back and we're like, you couldn't ask for anything better.
That's
one of the reasons why we go back with our expeditions and things like that, because
it's got a track record. There's history.
Things have happened. And it goes back too to the 1980s.
Wow. It goes way back before that. But the point is it has activity and
all the time.
You know, why go someplace that you might get activity when you know you've had activity? Yeah. So, and then, you know, we go out. Part of the research is figuring out what where it might go, how it might get there, where it's going to go, what's it going to do, why is it going there?
Right.
So all that, you know, is it bedding? Is it sleeping? Is it water? Is it food? Is it breeding? Is it
that's right? Yeah. After a certain amount of time, it's going to exhaust the food source, so it's got to make
it's
it.
Gotta move on.
Exactly.
Now I forget. Was it Eric or Tim who got escorted with their wife out of the woods?
That was Tim. And that was me, yeah.
It was you,
that's
Tim.
That's with the twist. Yeah. That was after an expedition had happened.
Right.
But that happened as well. Kim is deaf in one ear from meningitis, so she can't hear it. And it was on the side of the trail. I'm walking on this side. The trail's on this side. There's a cliff. On one side, basically a very, very steep mountain, and there's a road cut into it, and then there's a steep downslope which goes into Sanderson Brook Falls. And Sanderson Brook Falls was another, that was, I don't know, 16, 17. It was one of them, another expedition.
And yeah, this was right after that expedition.
Right, but we had infrasound, we think we had infrasound that night. It was pretty uneventful with some owls and whatnot. But that night, you remember Kevin Romero?
Dear friend.
Kevin. Very, very good guy. Right on.
May he rest. Yes.
May he rest. Good guy.
I knew you, Kevin. Yeah.
Great guy. So anyways, he's up there, and he's probably 50 yards. Him and Vivian are right up there next to us, and they're recording what's going on. And so it's kind of fun. We were kind of going back and forth. And Eric, myself, his son, Chris, I'll just use her first name, Jean, who you'll know, and Bob.
Okay.
And these folks were on the road. All right.
It's a dirt fire road.
Dirt fire road. Like I say, cliff on one side, cliff on the other, road here.
Yeah, there's
nowhere to
go. There's no space.
Exactly.
Yeah, man.
So,
exactly.
We're sitting there. I'm on my butt, and I'm laying on my elbows, just chilling, sitting back, looking at the night sky, talking. You know, we're all just waiting for something to happen with Bigfoot, and
Kevin's and all of a sudden.
And the recorder.
Yeah, absolutely. He's up the road recording everything.
Everything.
All of a sudden, this rock starts falling down the hill, rolling down the hill. Uh-huh. And that's what it sounds like. We're all sitting here hearing a rock coming down this hill. And it's not just a rock. It's a large rock because you can hear things happening and you can hear it coming.
Yeah.
I'm like, holy shit. And I'm freaking out. I'm now actually trying to get up and stand up so I can get out of the way because this rock is coming down the mountain and I can't see it. It's dark. It's 1 o'clock in the morning or so.
It's pitch black. I mean, you could not see your hand.
I finally get up on my feet and we move to one side and it stops. Just stops. Just like that. Just stops. No more noise. No nothing. Just stops. Mm-hmm. Like, okay.
Something actually happened to us with Kevin. We were sitting on a log and we're all sitting there and Kevin has this directional microphone on stick. So he couldn't hear anything except the direction that he's aiming. And this thing, it sounded like a giant log or a boulder or something was coming down the hill behind us. We all get up and we're like, what is that? And then we turn around, Kevin's just sitting there like this.
Kevin's like this, sitting there. No clue.
Yeah.
Stopped, like it, like you said.
Yeah.
It didn't really do anything. Right. Crazy.
That is cool. Right.
It didn't roll away or nothing. It just stopped. This stopped, like as soon as it started, it stopped. You know, and this, you could hear it rolling down the hill. Enough to where it concerned me enough to get off my butt and get out of the way.
Right.
It was real. It was real in my mind. I heard this.
Oh, yeah.
We all heard it. We all heard it happening. Yeah, we all heard it. And Kevin said it was on a recorder. So yeah. I don't have the tapes from Vivian, but if he says it's there, it's there.
Oh, yeah.
Simple as that.
I might have it. I have to check the SD cards, although I didn't get all of his audio recordings. I got.
Well, it'll be a Blandford State for
when
us.
When we talked to him, he said that he had it. He was recording because when we were standing on that road after that happened.
Yeah,
it was, I don't know, maybe a minute after that. I had my back to the edge of that ravine,
sitting next to a garbage.
And there was a noise that it sounded like something was thrown that weighed about 50 tons and hit the side of the ravine wall.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
It was just bam. It would just slammed it. But you didn't hear anything. You didn't hear anything roll. You didn't hear anything slide. You didn't hear grass. You didn't hear dirt. You didn't hear nothing.
No.
We went back the next day. There wasn't even a mark.
Yeah.
So there wasn't a mark.
That's what we thought. We had an experience with infrasound.
He says he might have it on tape, though.
So we had the thing rolling down the hill.
Oh, I think we lost you.
No, I just moved it while she went to go grab this for me.
Gotcha.
But I happen to have... That's Kevin's.
Wow. Very good. Nice.
So... This is a vape sock I brought on my stick. You know what I mean? Yeah. Now he and I—that's who—that's who taught me using the Charles Kimbrough audio. Okay, on our mic sticks.
Mic sticks. Yeah.
I use my H1N for that one, and I have an H2N that I put on top of the truck to record other audio.
We missed Kevin.
Kevin was 2 hours down to go with us out in the Pine Barrens, like a soldier. You know what I mean? Like he would show up.
He didn't even need notice. Yeah. You guys are out in the woods. I'll meet you out there. And
I'll meet you out there.
Yeah. He was on every expedition that we had.
Yeah.
Numerous. He never missed one.
34 expeditions under his belt. Yeah.
Yeah. So Kevin was there. He's recorded this. He says he's got it on there. Potentially it's there. Mm-hmm. But literally we heard this slamming of a giant rock.
It was
crazy. Right behind him. We go back the next day, you know,
everybody heard it. They're like, what was that?
We walk up to the top, mountain where we heard the rocks rolling down, and we didn't find any rock. We didn't find any disruption from a rock rolling or any of that. We didn't find a rock. It just didn't, wasn't there.
Yeah.
We looked for a tree that broke and rolled. We looked for any excuse that would make the noise we heard,
and we couldn't find it. It just simply didn't, it wasn't there.
Yeah.
The rock that, what sounded like a rock that impacted the wall right behind him, the dirt wall, there was no impression.
Nothing.
There was no rock tumbling down. There was nothing.
Not a leaf was moved. Nothing.
But there were, but the sound was there.
It was incredible. The impact that that sound had.
You were ducking.
Yeah, you ducked. You thought somebody actually threw a huge rock at you.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we go out and we're looking. Didn't see nothing. I go back the next week or maybe a couple days later with my wife. And we're, let's go for a walk. We'll go up to the falls. And we go up and we're checking it out. And we get right to the very the spot where we had the incident. I'm telling her what happened that night. And nothing's really happening. We start walking up a little bit further. And then all of a sudden to my right, on the uphill side of the mountain, it was kind of the side my wife was on. It started like shaking branches and tree snapping and sound like sticks breaking. Sound like a little, I don't know, just a whole bunch of noise in the side of the woods.
Yeah, this is it's on an angle. This hill's on an angle. It's not one that you're just going to be there for the sake of being there.
It's more like a cliff.
It's
not something you're going to walk on.
Not normal.
Aided or guided. Some of it's vertical. Some of it's it was very, very, very difficult at best. And this thing handrailed us all the way, meaning it followed us like a handrail,
like a parallel.
Paralleled us, and it was up on the top of the midway up or so, maybe 100 yards or so. We couldn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
All Mount Laurel, green striped maple, all this low shrubs and stuff like that, and it's full. It's all green, so you can't see very far up, but you can hear the ruckus it's making, walking and sliding down the edge, because it's steep. And this thing is, you could see the wear where it had come down and moved rocks and stuff like that, but there was no track, because it was on a rocky slope. It got to a point where we got to a singing bridge. It was like a wire mesh type of a bridge. And at that point, it crossed the river. My wife and I crossed it, and the noises stopped, and we kept going.
Wow.
I went back the next day with Eric and hiked back all the way up to see if we get, elicit a response or something, anything. And we didn't get anything, but while we were up there, we found the tree break or the tree twist. And that was a full, complete-on twist.
Yeah.
And, if you heard me talk in the past, I'm not a big structure guy and tree guy and things like that. I just don't know enough about it yet. And some of the stuff that people put out there, I don't buy into it. Some of it I do, but it really has to be moving and it has to be exemplary or stand out. And this stood out. This had a multiple twist in it, whereas a complete full twist and then some. And then the tree was pulled right out of the ground, the root ball and everything.
Wow.
Twisted and pulled right out. And this was a sapling 2.5-3 inches, good size around. And you just ain't going to go pulling that tree out.
Yeah.
But there was, this thing was pulling and breaking and snapping. And this just happened to be one of the twisted ones. So I would imagine it was just aggravated, kind of getting out of here, yelling. Now, my wife didn't hear it. She heard nothing. I'm just like patting her on the backside. Yeah. Let's go. I'm hearing it. Mm-hmm. I'm like, no, this thing is telling us to leave. Wow. So off we go.
But we do have the twist.
Yeah, it's out there somewhere.
And it was in the middle of the woods. I mean, there's nothing else I know that's going to twist it.
Yep.
Yeah, I had a similar experience, but not with all the intimidation behavior. I was solo hiking in the Pine Barrens early on, back in 2008. And I came across two small trees that were twisted out. They were about 1.5 feet, 2 feet twists off the ground, and the trees were laying off the trail. So something twisted them off.
Oh, yeah.
And it was equipment nearby. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
What can do that? Not too many guys. No.
Yeah, right. Exactly. We've been in the woods where we've had moose go in, and they're in a rut. and they start tearing it up, and they're, you know, you'll find saplings 15, 20 feet up in a tree. So right. How'd that get there? Well, we actually watched the moose do it. Okay. So we got to see it. You know, they get in there and they start rutting, getting velvet off and whatnot, coming into rut, and they get a little dumb and stupid and territorial, and they just start trashing stuff. Yeah. And next thing you know, there's trees and breaks and things like that. But you can generally tell when an animal has been in there. Sure. You're going to get the hoof tracks. You're going to get digs. You're going to get push offs. You're going to get a lot of stuff. There's a lot of action going on if you're looking.
Right? And you're going to see the scraping that they do with their antlers and the, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Generally what's indicated.
Yeah, you could definitely tell the difference between that and that. Where that twist was, there was nothing.
Right.
Yeah. It was just that twist. Yeah. To have it go and wrap like that. You know, you could take it and break it, twist, you know, half twist, maybe get it to go one way, but not a full, complete twist and a half.
You know, it wasn't like there was anything digging around it or anything.
Plus, we had the infrasound. We didn't know it was infrasound even.
We didn't even think of that.
We just knew we heard something and couldn't find what caused it. That's all we knew.
Sure.
But it happened.
That's really cool.
That is a cool story.
To come up there.
Yeah, man.
I want to.
We've had some wild things happen. Yeah. And we think we're this lucky because we've noticed a pattern of activity from summer till fall going into winter, where it's more prevalent to see or have a Bigfoot experience or a sighting within, you know, let's say June to December. And then that's our window. And we kind of attribute it to the harvest season. You know, that's a late winter harvest.
June, like springtime, and then more in the fall time then?
Yep. Yeah.
Here, it's really hot in the summer. So activity does die down a little bit in July and August.
Yep.
And picks back up in like September, October, you know?
This one here was lucky. In September. That was in September, the October Mountain one. Mm-hmm. That was a September cast. Yeah. The one Eric had with his experience, where his visual, that was in June. Okay. That was in June. That's a 17 and a half inch track.
Yeah, you know, so huge. You might get activity during those hot months. It won't be as much as
could be transitioning
spring and fall.
Oh, yeah, we get activity.
It does
die down.
Still some
really
activity.
Here. And they're following the food is what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the raw too. Like that's what we've been, you know, trying to kind of come to terms with. Like if you follow the growing pattern, right? Like the warmer, like down here it's gonna start growing earlier and it moves north.
You can follow spring all the way up.
Exactly. You know what I mean? So there's
the Appalachian Trail hikers follow spring all the way up.
Yeah,
and they're going to do the same thing. They're just going to follow the bark and buds. They're popping out. All your wild berries and stuff will start.
And it's funny you mentioned the AT, because on one of our Southern New York expeditions, we had a similar experience. We had three teams set up around, you know, this area where there's been a number of road crossings and other sightings. And my team had gone the furthest to the northern tip of the lake, you know what I mean, on this rock outcrop. I had another team a little further south of the lake, and then the group that was near the parking area where they first came in, they didn't have to hike too far, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they had an orb experience where this orange yellow orb also was seen just hovering and then went up into the trees and, like, you know, gone. You know what I mean? And then we had, the other team had a rock thrown at them as they were leaving. And my team and I, we were the last ones to leave. And I did some samurai chatter because I knew a couple of guys. Bobby, okay, from Massachusetts, wanted to hear samurai chatter. So as they were leaving to go meet up with another team, I did some samurai chatter to get them to put their radio on as they were leaving. And a minute later, we were getting howls from across the lake that was like a mournful female type sound. It was awesome.
Oh, wow.
We got like 12 dozen recorded howls. Just, that, you know what I mean? With the 5 second
break. They sound sad.
They sounded
They really do. Yeah.
But,
I mean,
These are just things that you just don't expect, but you're just so grateful when it happens, especially if you're the organizer and it's Saturday night. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you just scored, right? Everybody just got what they paid for.
Yeah, man.
Yeah,
absolutely. And that means a lot. That means a lot. And that's why we try so hard to, you know, get you to the spot where we think you're going to have that moment. And
knock on wood, we have had some very good outcomes with every time we've gone out.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been just lucky.
Yeah.
Being in the right place, right time.
Right place at the right time. Exactly. You know,
that's where the boots on the ground and the investigations all worked out.
Yeah, because you're not going to get the data, the information, and the visual, and anything without going out and actually doing it.
You don't
you can't sit on the couch and go, yep, oh yeah, yeah.
You do it. You have a microphone by going to, you know, these little places like this.
That's right.
And these people come out and talk. You know, they say, hey, there's some wacko like me. I will go talk to them.
Absolutely. And when we do this, those people, like I said, about 5 mile radius. They have had so many things happen around them. We know that there's people out there that have seen it. They're just not talking about it.
Yeah.
So we're hoping that this is going to kick it into overdrive and they're going to let us know.
You probably had experiences you haven't reported.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
You just haven't done the paperwork.
Right. You know? It's like us. We've had numerous experiences
and we just haven't made the actual report.
You know, because we're investigators, you know, so we don't fill it.
You almost blow it off.
Before I even reported my road crossing to the BFRO, before it got on there, you know what I mean? So I've had two visual sightings myself, once in British Columbia and once here in New Jersey. So I'm in the camp of I know they exist kind of thing.
Exactly. Yes, they do.
But I'll tell you what, we've had a lot of good success also, but there's never, and you know, as an organizer, you're always nervous and worried that you're not going to
give the
customer what they want, but we've been very fortunate, you know?
I think so. And, you know, we might not get visuals and things like that, but we always get something.
At least audio, you know, vocalizations, recordings, we get rocks thrown, things like that. Track hits. First expedition, we got these track casts that are behind me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, and that's awesome. You know, because you're always getting something. At least something is happening.
Right.
You know, and having the guys, you know, that they're so grateful. Like when my team goes out and we record Howls, and it's like the you know how exciting it is. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I remember how excited I was on my first expedition in 2008 in Northwest PA just to record two wood knocks. You know what I mean? That was
I got my first wood knock.
Yeah, you do. She got her first wood knock when the producers from Finding Bigfoot were coming to meet us at one of our research areas. We convinced them to come out with us one night.
I was messing around and I did a knock and I got her.
She got two knocks back. Yeah,
and there was like nothing for miles. I mean, just pine barrens.
I mean, you guys, you've got stories for days, you know what I mean? So, like,
we should have you guys on sometime. That would be really cool.
You're the exact kind of guest we love having on our program. I don't know. I mean, we've already been talking, it seems like, for a couple of hours.
I didn't mean it. I said something to him, like, let's wrap it up because we were losing batteries.
I forgot to plug in my equipment.
Battery, I'm like,
I left and I got my battery.
Technical difficulty.
Don't make the blooper real.
Yeah. My sinus issues. I apologize for that as well.
Believe me, I feel for you.
I can't imagine having that kind of a, you know.
I'm like this year round, though. I think it's indoor allergies.
But you have definitely
the vaping.
The vaping doesn't help, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But no, this has been a lot of fun hearing your stories. I didn't want to, you know. Did you have anything else you wanted to bring up? I'm going to put the description in our link, of course. Or excuse me, I'm going to put the link in the description. Your, you know, research and investigation, expedition type stuff, and also, I mean, like I said, I might even do a little short to promote the event you're doing on Friday night. I think it is, right?
Awesome. Yeah. And we can come back. I mean,
we've got some more
stories. Like you, we've got stories.
Do another segment for you.
And we really like to be planning to come up there.
We've been talking about getting up that way at some point. I mean, I hope make that happen at some point. And you two are absolutely welcome to come down and check us out here in the Pine Barrens. I haven't done any northern New Jersey expeditions lately. My friend Larry's been doing the northern New Jersey ones, you know, for the BFRO. But I'm talking about doing some Squatch Talks expeditions also.
Yeah.
You know, outside, you know.
Yeah. Come on up. We'll do a live one out in the field.
That would be awesome. Well, we had this John Connor join John on his expedition, right? John O'Connor. I have this Frank L. I won't mention his last name, but he came out with us one night. He was also wanting to write a Bigfoot book. You know what I mean?
Right.
And Matt, you know, Matt said to me, hey, we got this inquiry from this radio station. I said, no, I don't take radio or media people out on my expeditions. I don't want them disrupting our night. That's not what it's about, okay? Yeah. But this Frank L., my research friend Art and I and Kevin, took him out into the Pine Barrens one night.
I ain't going back.
Material.
The Pine Barrens are very, very interesting. I mean, there's just so much, like, that's unique to the Pine Barrens.
Huh. The whole Jersey Devil thing. That's a creepy story.
Well, hey, we're going to have to put that on the list. We're going to have to come on down.
Yeah, the Squatches here are a little, like,
standoffish.
Yeah, and they're not, like...
They're like, hey, forget about it.
Yeah.
They come check it. They're like the Sopranos. Hey, you know? They come and check you out. They want to see who's coming into their territory and if you're taking any food sources. You know what I mean?
And they're not they're not as big.
They'll throw something at you. But then they move on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We had one night on an expedition a couple years ago where there was like two or three, and we were in a bowl setting. So there was a couple of them on top of the bowl and one behind the attendees. I'm a half mile away with my team with Kevin and Vivian. And I actually named that location in honor of Kevin. I named it K-Pond.
Yes.
Last place. That was the last place we squatched together in the Pine Barrens. So
cool. Well, yeah. That's good. I'm sure he's awesome. He approves.
Hey, I'm sure he does. And you know what? I he knows now. He's got all the answers. You know
there what There you I mean? Go. That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Doing the sky kind of thing, you know. But we miss him. And
he's probably like, look at those idiots down there. Look at him.
He's up here with a parabolic and some microphones checking out our podcast.
Yeah. He's tuned in for sure, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know if you've checked out our episodes or not, but we have one that we Garden State Bigfoot with Kevin that we did, and a couple of other episodes where we mentioned, of course, a lot of the antics. But no, we had a lot of good times, and just listening to you tonight, we had a lot of similar experiences and things in common. Yes. You know what I mean? And that's something as researchers that we need to do, is to network with to not keep these things a secret, you know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah.
And we need to share our results so that we can see the correlations and know what to look for also, you know what I mean? Because you are both on the East Coast, right?
Yeah. Yep. We just were talking with, it was Roger Miller and I think Bill Rigby, a couple podcasters down south. And again, sharing information. You know, like us talking about that hex clothing material potentially hiding the electrical output. It may not make sense to some people. Some people say, well, they're totally whacked anyway. They think of Bigfoot. And then there's people that say, you know what? That dude might be on something. And, hey, I'm hoping I am.
Yeah, man.
You know, if I get that,
I'll
take it.
You got to try and you got to pass on all of your experiences. You know, you got to share them. That way there you can find patterns and similarities and things like that.
Sorry. Here, people are so secretive. They're like, mind, you know? They don't want to... information.
Yeah, and the other thing is kind of closed-mindedness, and I'm one of them when it comes to structures and tree stuff. Doesn't mean I totally block it out. Just means it's really got to catch my attention.
Right. You
know? But other than that, you know, we take everything we hear at a grain of salt. We don't go running off and say everything is a Bigfoot. You know, we do this for a living, being working outdoors. And you weed out every possibility before you even go down the realm of a Bigfoot.
Right.
And that's what we do. You know, and then once we get a report and it's worthy, we go out there, we start to make the investigations. That's why we know Alton Beckett, there's a you know, there's a number of good reports.
We've had stuff happen
trying to bring them out
5 miles from that store.
Yeah.
So we know that there's things going on, you know.
It's fishing, right? We're out there fishing. I'm doing that whole fishing thing, waiting for Bigfoot to shake the tree.
Yeah, again. This time he was actually fishing and I was paddling.
Yeah. That's awesome.
I hope you guys have a great time on Friday. You guys get a good turnout.
I really hope it goes smoothly. We just did a convention a couple of weeks ago, the first annual Bucks County paranormal thing.
Yep.
So I was the Bigfoot guy. I wrapped it up. Cool. Nick Pope was there. Bill Burns was there from Ancient Aliens. My friend Eric Mintel from Eric Mintel Investigates. So yeah. We had like 400 attendees. It was wonderful. It was a good day. So.
Yeah.
Awesome.
To have the people come up to your booth, and ask you questions and tell some of their stories, right? So I hope you're going to find a lot of people who are forthcoming and willing to talk to you. But if not, at least you're going to be able to share some of this with them, and now they'll know where to go if they have an encounter. You know what I mean?
That's the whole thing. A lot of a lot of people, they might contact us after the fact. after the show, they'll say, hey, I got a story I want to tell you. I didn't want to tell you there.
Exactly.
Because they're embarrassed. So that's okay.
We're doing a library show or something like that. You got a couple hours and you could do more than that, but they got you in the parking lot again after the show for a couple hours, and they're picking your brain. You haven't even put your stuff in your car yet, but it's just, so there's a lot of interest. It's another medium to get out there, and this was one of them. It's, we go knocking on doors, we're looking for Bigfoot, and if they want to do it, we'll do it.
And before I let you guys go, tell me the website. How do people get a hold of you?
Just go to the Facebook. It's the Vogel Brothers page. You just type in Vogel Brothers, smash the like button, follow us. We do have some fun information coming up where we're going to do some big things. I just got to do some get my ducks in a row, and we'll let you know. But we got some fun big things coming up for New Year's.
That's what we're doing too. Like I said, we're having fun, right? Yeah. We're getting outdoors, right?
That's it.
No trace, like Bigfoot, right?
Exactly.
That's what it's about. Hey, you guys, this was a fun.
Awesome.
This was a fun interview, I have to tell you. So we just kicked off season 5, and it was an honor and a privilege to have you join us. We're going to have you again. So,
excellent. Thank you. It was nice being in. See you later.
What do we say?
Thanks for squatching.
Thanks for checking out this episode of Squatch Talks Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, follow, and give us a like. And stay tuned for more exciting stories on Squatch Talks.